every time to start to give an invited talk, you are supposed to say something like, thank you very much for this invitation. Well, this time I don't want only to say thank you very much for such a kind of invitation. It's always great to get back to Prague. But I want to thank you all and the Institute of Formal and Applied Linguistics for the terrific support you gave me since the very beginning of the Index Domesticus Tree Bank project around 10 years ago. And I still remember when I came here the first time, it was 2006, and someone of you asked me about the size of the Index Domesticus Tree Bank at that time, and I was so proud to say that I had more or less 100 sentences annotated at the analytical layer. So things have changed a lot. Today, the Index Domesticus Tree Bank is the largest Latin tree bank available, and we are here talking about what happens when Thomas Aquinas comes to Prague. And actually, I should refine slightly this title, as I discovered that Thomas Aquinas was here in Prague much before the Index Domesticus Tree Bank came here to Ufal, as one of the statues of the Charles Bridge is that of the Virgin Mary, Saint Dominic, and Thomas Aquinas. So he was already here. But jokes apart, I recognize the talk into three main parts. In the first part, I will deal with the relationship between Latin and computational linguistics. In the second, which is the core of the talk, I will deal with a number of issues in tetragrammatical annotation of Latin. And the third part, this with a comparison in terms of overlapping degree between two lexical resources for Latin, namely Latin Vallex and Latin WordNet. And Latin Vallex is shaped more or less like your PDT Vallex. So I hope that the method that we performed here might be interesting and helpful also for you. Well, Latin and computational linguistics. I have to tell you a story here. Around 10 years ago, I was at the sixth edition of the International Workshop on Tree Banks and Linguistic Theories, so TLT. It was the Bergen edition. And I was presenting my very first poster on the Index Domesticus Tree Bank. And Erhard Inrich, so one of the boss of TLT, came to my poster and asked me, "Oh, Marco, why are you building a tree bank for such an exotic language?" Well, this was a good question in 2006. It's not a good question anymore, because the field aimed at developing advanced language resources like tree banks are, and NLP tools for Latin, ancient Greek, in general, ancient languages, has really exploded over the last decade. But well, the relationship between Latin and computational linguistics does not stem from the start of the tree bank, but from the very start of the discipline itself, mostly thanks to the amazing work done by this man, Father Roberto Busa, who is generally known as one of the pioneers of what we today call computational linguistics, humanities computing, also digital humanities. Well, Father Busa started in 1949, this is the official date, to work on the Index Domesticus, which is known as one of the first digital corpora, now we say this. At that time, they called it the machine-readable version of the Opera Omnia of Thomas Aquinas, around 11 million words, and it is quoted among the first digital corpora, together with the Brown Corpus, for instance. And Father Busa started at the end of the 40s to work with IBM computers on Thomas Aquinas' texts, and IBM computers that were as large as this room, more or less, at the end of the 40s, first part of the 50s. And the corpus is fully lemmatized and morphologically tagged. So on this corpus, we started in 2006 to build the Index Domesticus Tree Bank, which is, as I said, the largest Latin tree bank available, and it follows your style. So the PDT annotation style, I don't have to explain here what the analytical and tetragrammatical layers are, and this is the size, more or less 300,000 nodes at the analytical layer, and more or less 28,000 at the tetragrammatical layer. And my hope is to come back here in 10 years talking to you about the 1 million words annotated at the tetragrammatical layer, even in the Index Domesticus Tree Bank. Well, so we can say that Latin, in some ways, is the mother tongue of computational linguistics. And in Milan, we are so lucky that we have the Busa Archive. Well, the Busa Archive is the personal archive of Father Busa that he wanted to donate to my university, to our library, a couple of years before his death in 2011. And the Booz Archive is really a treasure, believe me. Come to Milan and visit the Booz Archive. We will be happy to open your archive. It's freely accessible. Because Father Busa was a great collector. And you can really trace the history of our discipline looking at the document in the archive. And looking for some document to show you, I got through what I think is the oldest document attesting the birth of the idea behind the Index Thomisticus. And it's the 1st of November of 1948, and Father Busa writes in Latin to this Father Peter O'Reilly, who was a Jesuit at the Indiana University, Notre Dame, who was known to have built an index of all the words of a text of Thomas Aquinas, which is the Summa Contra Gentes. And let's read it together. So Father Busa, 1948, writes, "My idea was to build an index of the words of all aglutined, the words of Thomas Aquinas. And for this aim, I thought to build out of all the works of him a schedularium, so a collection of cards of the same kind that you built for the Summa Contra Gentes. Nil omnino aduc inceperam. I haven't started nothing yet. But I completely devoted myself in querenda via et medis, in looking for the way and the means in order to reach this aim. Opus enim per magnum. As a matter of fact, such a huge work exiged, requires almost 10 million cards. So this is important because some months after this date, in 1949, Father Busa went to visit Thomas Watson Sr., the founder of IBM, and convinced Thomas Watson to support financially his work on the Index Thomisticus for more than 30 years. And so in some way, just some months after this letter, Father Busa was able to find via et medis the way and the means. And it's famous, the story of Thomas Watson, same name, who said to Father Busa, "Please remember that IBM means international business machines and not international Busa machines." So he understood the man perfectly. Well, in the archive, there are several different materials, among which are also press articles that Father Busa collected about his work. And they're very interesting because the headlines of the press articles, especially those from the 50s, give an idea about the kind of reception of these new ideas among the public opinion. And the 50s in particular were years of great expectations, big computers, big words. And you can see it in the headlines, cybernetics and new science. This was published in Malta in 1954. Another headline that I love is this one: "Electronic brain will vivisect Thomistic text." Again, Malta, 1956. And this was, I'm sure, a term that Father Busa suggested to the journalist, I'm sure. And again, in Lisboa, Portugal, "As máquinas da era electrónica ao serviço da cultura humanística." So, era electrónica, vivisect, electronic brain, cybernetics, big words for big years, for great expectations, and Latin was there. But Father Busa was really related also to Prague. And in the archive, I could find a number of documents about Prague. And for instance, there is this new notiziario. Notiziario was a newsletter that Father Busa received about news in the research world. And this is dated 21st February 1962. And Father Busa is informed about the start in Prague of a department of computational linguistics. It says, here it is. It says, "At the Institute of Czech Language of the Academy of the Czechoslovak Academy of Sciences, it started in these days its activity, a section of mathematics and applied linguistics." It's 21st February 1962. The researchers of the Institute make use in their research on Czech language of the most different branches of mathematics. And the core of such researches deals with the statistical processing of the words of Czech, highlighting the frequency of single letters, of the words themselves, and of their different union and combination. So, Father Buza was informed that something was happening in Prague. And he was always very related to this institute, and this is another letter, a letter from the Buza archive by Peters Gall, who announces to Father Buza, March 66, that they're sending him the number 4 of the Prague Bulletin of Mathematical Linguistics. And I literally grew up with Father Buza, and so I always remember the Prague Bulletin of Mathematical Linguistics there in his office. And he came to Prague several times, among which is 1966. He came here with Antonio Zampolli for this conference on mechanization and automation of linguistic research. And we have a box in the Buza archive where there is written Prague 1966, where Father Buza collected anything about this travel. And there are all the documents that he and Antonio Zampolli, at that time his pupil, used in order to prepare the talk for the conference and then the paper for the proceedings. And as I told you, Father Buza was a great collector. He collected anything about this travel. And we also have the brochure of the hotel where he stayed here in Prague in 1966. So we have everything. We have the visa, we have the flight tickets. Everything is there. You can trace the history of his life. And I don't know if these hotels still exist, but I know that the Index Domesticus still exists. It's still alive and kicking, and so far, currently, it is the tree bank for Latin that features the highest level of linguistic annotation currently available, which is tectogrammatics. So let's move to the core of the talk after this long introduction about the relationship between Latin and computational linguistics. So, issues in tectogrammatical annotation of Latin. And I will go through three different constructions of Latin, and I will tell you how we decided to represent, to treat them in tectogrammatical annotation. So, the first of them is the so-called periphrastic construction with gerundive. So, for those of you who don't know Latin, so what is gerundive in Latin? It's a verbal form which functions as an adjective. So it's part of the verbal inflectional paradigm, but it functions as an adjective. So under a morphological point of view, a gerundive form is formed by the infectum stem, which is the stem that you use for present and imperfect, plus a thematic vowel, which is selected by the conjugation of the verb, plus an infix, nd, plus an ending of the so-called first-class adjectives. So an example, amandus, it's very easy. Am is the infectum stem for the verb amo amare, which means to love. A is the thematic vowel selected by first conjugation verbs. And E is the infix for the gerundive. And dus is one of the endings of the first-class adjectives. In particular, it is the ending for the singular nominative masculine. The semantics is that of obligation with a passive meaning, more or less similar to a future passive participle. We will see this better by looking at the two different uses that you can have of a gerundive in sentences, the so-called attributive and predicative use. So as an attributive use, in the attributive use, the gerundive functions exactly like an adjective. So like an adjective that modifies a noun, for instance. So agnus cedundus literally means a lamb to be slaughtered. You see, the obligation with passive meaning. So a lamb ready for slaughtering, similar to a future passive participle. The other use is the predicative use, like agnus cedundus est. So literally, the lamb is. This is a form of the verb sum, which means to be. So the lamb is to be slaughtered. The lamb must be slaughtered. And this is the construction we are dealing with here. So the periphrastic construction, which as you can see from the example, is formed by a form of the verb to be, est, and the gerundive. So cedundus est is the periphrastic construction. So before going to the examples, let's read together the rule that is behind the treatment of such construction in tetragrammatical tree structures. So, like in construction with modal verbs adding infinitives, like volo dicere, I want to say, in periphrastic construction formed with a gerundive, the inflected verb, which is the form of the lemma to be, sum, acts as a kind of auxiliary verb. So, this is why it does not appear in tetragrammatical tree structures, but it collapses into the node for the gerundive, which is the really meaning holder of the construction, the gerundive. So like in volo dicere, I want to say, want collapses into the verb of the infinitive, bringing a semantic feature, exactly in the same way here, est, the form of sum, collapses into the verb, into the node for the gerundive. Let's see an example. This is taken this is taken from Summa Contra Gentes, a work of Thomas Aquinas, and the interesting part for us is this one. It says, and, this is the analytical tree structure, and, so, it is to be demonstrated, so this is the periphrastic construction with gerundive, formed by a form of the lemma sum, to be, and a gerundive, so it is to be demonstrated that it is necessary. Okay, let's look at the tetragrammatical tree structure, which looks like this. First of all, the node for sum collapses into that for the monstro. So, here you have this occurrence of sum as the third person singular and the demonstrandum, which is the gerundive. This occurrence of sum collapses into this node. Do not be confused by the fact that here there is another occurrence of the verb sum. This is the subjunctive. So you will see another sum depending on the monstro, but it's not this, it's this one. So first of all, the node for sum collapses into that for the monstro, so the monstro becomes the root. Second, the grammatemes of sum are assigned to the monstro plus the value h or t for the deontic modality grammateme. H or t is the value for obligation. As you remember, the meaning of the gerundive is passive plus obligation. So with this value h or t assigned to the grammateme deontic modality, we face the obligation part of the meaning of the gerundive. So here it is, h or t. Third, the functor of sum is assigned to the monstro. If you remember in the previous tree structure, the ATS, sum was the root of the tree. So it was the main predicate. Usually, the main predicate, the pred analytical function, corresponds in tetragrammatical tree structure to the predicate functor. So this is the reason why the monstro is assigned the predicate functor. Then, all the nodes depending on sum in the analytical tree structure are made dependent on the monstro. So ideo depends on sum in the analytical tree structure, now it depends on the monstro. And finally, the subject in the analytical tree structure that depends on sum becomes the patient in the tetragrammatical tree structure in order to keep the passive meaning of the periphrastic construction. So, if we consider a tetragrammatical tree structure as a kind of abstract pattern representing the underlying syntax, the literal meaning of the sentence, regardless of the different surface forms, communicative means used in order to express this, which is analytical tree structure, we can read these three and understand the meaning. So, here it is. And so, according to the preceding context, there is a generic actor, so it's an impersonal structure. So, there is a generic actor who has to demonstrate. Here it is, H or T, obligation. There is a generic actor who has to demonstrate what? That it is necessary. So you have to demonstrate. It has to be demonstrated independently by the surface forms that this pattern can take in analytical tree structures. Well, this is the general meaning pattern behind. The second construction deals with the subordinating conjunction ne. And the subordinating conjunction ne is quite tricky because it incorporates basically the meaning of two different subordinating conjunctions, ut ne, ut and ne, which means literally that not, with an imperative and final meaning. So it's a subordinating conjunction. So like all subordinating conjunctions in tetragrammatical tree structures, also ne, which is assigned aux t in ATS, collapses into the node for the adverb of the clause that it introduces. I don't have to explain this here because you know it much better than me. So this collapsing of the ACS into the head node makes the semantic feature of negation carried by ne to be lost in the tetragrammatical tree structure, and we will see how it works. So our solution was to add a new node with the feature neg. We will see how it works. So this is an example, and it's a negative imperative in the summa contra gentes. Literally it means, do not, it's an imperative. So do not, here it is ne. Literally, put yourself into that cigarette, and do not, here it's expressed, and we will get back on this. This means basically dive into the arcane of the endless nativity. So, it's a negative imperative represented by a coordinated structure with two coordinated predicates. And the head here is the subordinating conjunction ne. So, this is the tetragrammatical tree structure. First of all, the conjunction ne, like all subordinating conjunction, collapses into the node of the head verb of the clause that it introduces. In this case, ne introduces a coordinated structure with two coordinated verbs, which are infero et immerco. So, ne collapses into them. Second, a neg newly added node is here, depending on infero, in order to keep the negative sense of the sentence. And this is the other part, a neg node is not newly added as depending on immergo as well, because the negation of immergo is already expressed, in the text by the word non, which is there. It is. This is the reason why this negation is a round node, because it corresponds to a lexical item in the text, while this is a square node because it is a newly added node. If this non was not there in the text, we would have made this newly added node dependent on the conjunction, because it would have been a shared modifier of both infero and immergo. So if we read this tetragrammatical tree structure again, we have the meaning. So you, second person, you, do not, imperative. So do not, literally, put yourself to, into the target, that cigarette, and do not dive, target, into the arcane of the endless nativity. The third construction deals with two kinds of tricky relative clauses. In particular, these are relative clauses acting as, as actor and patient of a verbal head. Maybe there is some other evidence here, but we haven't found it yet. So you have a relative clause, and this acts as the actor or the patient of a verbal head. There are two constructions here involved. The first deals with relative clauses featuring the relative pronoun qui in nominal function. So, qui in Latin is the relative pronoun. So it's like in English, who, that, which, all of them together. Second, relative clauses featuring an indefinite pronoun in nominal function, like quisquis, like quicunque, anything, anyone, and so on. So let's start from the first. So relative clauses that feature an occurrence of this qui, which is the relative pronoun in Latin. This is an example. So it's at the beginning of the Summa Contra Gentes, and Thomas Aquinas is trying to define what the wise man is. So he says, so that, literally, wise are said, this is a passive form of the verb, so wise are said, those who order things directly and govern them well. So the tricky point here is this qui. Wise are said, those who. You see in the translation there are two words there. So it's like qui incorporates a definite pronoun plus the relative pronoun. There are some instances in of this construction in Thomas Aquinas, and not only in Thomas Aquinas, where the definite pronoun is made explicit. So, like sapientes dicantur illi qui, which means those who, where with these those is explicit in the text. It occurs in the text. Well, here, it does not appear. It's not there. So, wise are said those who order things, and so on. So, this is the tecto-grammatical tree structure. First of all, a newly added node, perspron, is made dependent on the head verb of the main clause, which is dico, and this newly added node is assigned ist functor according to the semantic role of the relative clause. So, if the relative clause is the subject of an active verb, usually it's the actor. In this case, you have that the relative clause is the subject of a passive verb. So, wise are said those. So, this is the reason why the functor of the newly added perspron nom is patient and it's not actor, because it depends on a passive verb. The relative clause is made dependent on this newly added node, perspron, and its head verb, in this case, to members of the coordination, is assigned the functor restrictor, which is the usual functor that you assign to relative clauses modifying nouns. And third, a grammatical coreference is made between the relative pronoun in the relative clause and the newly added node perspron. This reads like this. There is a generic actor who says, who defines wise, those who. Or, and this is the part, there is a generic actor who says wise, those who order things directly and govern them, the things, well. So this is the tricky part that we had. In a similar way, we treated the relative clauses acting as actor or patient of a verbal head where there is an indefinite pronoun in nominal function. So, this is the analytical trick structure. So, anything, and this is the indefinite pronoun. It's a form of the lemma quisquis, neuter. So, anything that, again, two words, anything that is against such principles is against the wisdom of God. So, like in qui, you had those who, the definite pronoun and the relative pronoun. Here you have anything that. So an indefinite pronoun plus a relative role. So anything that. And this is the corresponding tecto-grammatical tree structure. So first of all, the indefinite pronoun whose dilemma is quis is made dependent on the head verb of the main clause. If we look at the main verb of the clause is contrarior, the main predicate. And so, quis, which is the dilemma for quicquid, is made dependent on the head verb of the main clause, on contrario, and it is assigned its functor according to the semantic role of the relative clause. So usually, if the relative clause is the subject of the verb, of an active verb, it is actor. In this case, the verb is passive, but this is assigned actor because the verb is a deponent one. So it has a passive form, but an active meaning. Then, the relative clause is made dependent on the indefinite dilemma, indefinite pronoun, and it said is assigned the factor restrictor, like for all relative clauses. And third, again, a new persprone node is added here, depending on the head verb of the relative clause, with grammatical coreference to the indefinite pronoun, like here. And this node is assigned its functor according to its semantic role in the relative clause. So in this case, it's the actor. Let's read it together because it's easier. You know it better than me. It's easier to look at trees than to describe trees. And it's even less boring. And so anything that is against such principle is against the wisdom of God. So, these were three constructions for which we had to find out a solution to represent them in tetragrammatical tree structures. We are creating a small manual for such constructions that will be available on our website. And basically, all the constructions that we treat exactly in the same way, which is the most part, as PDT, we do not describe them. We just say, look at the PDT guidelines. For those specific constructions, we are building a manual, and so you will be able to check them and maybe send me an email about your comments on this. So, the third part, I would like to show you a small experiment that we just started about comparing these two resources. Because, as you know, to the tree bank there are a number of resources that are related, and among which there is, of course, a valence lexicon that we built together with the tetragrammatical annotation. And we called with great fantasy Latin Valex, like PDT Valex, so sorry for the name. And so the motivation of this work was that today we have several lexical resources available. So we have dictionaries, ontologies, word nets, valency lexicon, and so on. But all of them deal with the same basic constituents. So all of them deal with words. All of them deal with lexical entries. And the difference is that there are different criteria for organizing these very same things. So the words. So different views on lexical meaning. In this case, we deal with lexical resources that follow two different approaches to lexical meaning, very well known, like frame semantics. The meaning of some words can be fully understood only by knowing the frame elements that are evoked by those words. And according to this approach, you have tasks like valency annotation, semantic role labeling, lexical resources like PropBank, VerbNet, FrameNet, and so on. The other approach is that very well known by WordNet, so based on the idea of synonymy in the broad sense. So words are included in synsets, as you know, and the set of words that are sets of words that are interchangeable in some context without changing the truth value of the proposition in which they are embedded. At least this is what the glossary of WordNet says. The two approaches are not incompatible. There is a lot of literature about merging lexical resources, and some of them, as you can see here, deal also with Czech, so I will not go in details on this literature, but I will describe you our lexical resources. So, lexical Latin Valex on one side and Latin WordNet on the other. And Latin Valex is very similar to your PDT Valex, was built in conjunction with the tetragrammatical annotation of two Latin tree banks, so the Index Domesticus tree bank and the Latin Dependency tree bank, which collects data from the classical period. So there you find Cicero and Sallust and Propius and Ovid. And this is an example of a lexical entry. So, for instance, for the verb applico, applicare, to apply, its frame entry number one as a valency with three arguments. 1, 4, 3 corresponds to the surface form, so the first is a nominative, the second accusative, and the third is dative. And to each of the valency elements, one attribute is assigned, which is a functor, actor, patient, and the C. So it's very easy. This frame entry for applico has three arguments, an actor at the nominative case, a patient at the accusative case, and an addressee at the dative case. We have around 1,000 lexical entries and more or less 2,000 frames. And instead, the other lexical resource is Latin WordNet, which is part of multi-WordNet with a size of around 10,000 lemmas. It's quite small. So we wanted to compare these two lexical resources, not to merge them, but to evaluate their degree of overlapping. So the basic idea is to evaluate the degree of overlapping between a number of homogeneous lexical subsets that we extracted from the two resources. And this is a core concept here, the homogeneous lexical subset. What do we mean with homogeneous lexical subset? These lexical subsets in Latin WordNet are just the synsets. So all the words that belong to one synset are a lexical subset of Latin WordNet. The lexical subset for the Latin Valex lexicon are groups of lexical entries that share the same properties of arguments at frame entry level, where semantics is at most. So, for instance, one homogeneous lexical subset from Latin Valex is formed by all the words that have three arguments, and these three arguments are actor, patient, and addressee. So, homogeneous lexical subset that you extract from your data, from your resources. So, the maximum of overlapping between the two resources holds when all the words that belong to the same Latin Valex subset do occur in the same synset of WordNet. So imagine that you have all the, your words, three arguments, actor, patient, and addressee. If all these words of a Latin Valex subset share also the same Latin WordNet, do occur in the same Latin WordNet synset, there is maximum overlapping between these subsets. Of course, the minimum overlapping is the opposite. When there is no word of a Latin Valex subset, they share the same synset of WordNet with any of the other words of the same subset. So all the words are called single words. So imagine you have all your words that are actor, patient, and addressee, and none of them shares with any of the other of the same group the same synset in WordNet, minimum overlapping. Of course, between the maximum and the minimum, there are some degrees. And so we had to find the evaluation matrix of this degree of overlapping. They are very easy. The first of them is just counting the number of single words and that of couples, triples, entuples in the Latin Valex subset that share the same synset. What does it mean? A couple is formed by two words that belonging to the same subset of Latin Valex, actor, patient, and addressee, and that share also the same synset of Latin WordNet. A triple is three words, a quadruple is four words, and so on. So we just count this. Second, we count the so-called connection degree of a word, which is the number of words in the Latin Valex subset with which a word belonging to that subset shares the same synset. So, we have our group of three arguments words, actor, patient, and addressee. Let's take one of these words. This word share the same synset of WordNet with other 10 words of the same subset of Latin Valex. Its connection degree, it's 10. It's quite easy. So, a good overlapping between the subset extracted from the two resources is given by a low percentage of singles, which are the less connecting ones. A high number of couples and entuples, this being as more meaningful as the value of n is higher, because a sextuple is heavier than a couple. And a high number of words with high connection degree. So we had to select the subset, the homogeneous lexical subset from Latin Valex. And we used a number of selection criteria on the arguments, and we focused on verbal entries only, because verbs are the most valency-capable words. So, the first of them is the quantity. It's quite easy. The number of arguments in the frame entry. So, an homogeneous lexical subset is formed by all the verbs with three arguments. Quantity. The quality of the arguments, which is the semantic role, so the functors. Let's keep all the verbs with three arguments, act or patient are the same. And the third one is the surface form in terms of part of speech and case. So, three arguments, act or patient and under C, and under C must be a noun at the dative case. So this is a subset. So let's take a look at some of the results. We are just at the beginning here. So these five means that in the Latin Vallex subset, AP2, which means three arguments, actor, patient, and direction 2, you have five singles. So there are five words in this subset that are not connected to any of the other, which means that do not share the same synset of word net with any of the other of the same group. Second, this one here means that in the Latin Vallex subset APAD, three arguments, actor, patient, addressee, there is one sextuple. So six words belonging to this subset, they share the same synset of WordNet. And in this same subset, there are also two words with connection degree 9. So this means that these words share the same Latin WordNet synset with 9 different words belonging to the same subset of Latin Vallex. So these two words are do, to give, and doffero, to offer. In particular, the 9 words that share the same synset of Latin WordNet with do are these: attribuo, to assign; dedo, to consign; largior, to donate; mito, to send; offero, to offer; peribio, to present; previo, to offer again; refero, to report; tribuo, to assign. You see that there is a semantic commonality between these. They are different, but they are even similar. So it's something like there is something common that is somewhere between valency frames and synsets. So a simple evaluation. From the result, we saw that the low overlapping is given by subsets that include the direction 2 argument. The medium overlapping is given by subset that feature a patient expressed by a verbal phrase, and the highest one is given by subset with the addressee argument. This can be explained in several different ways. We just chose two. First, the overlapping degree depends on the level of granularity, of semantic granularity, of the semantic roles in the entries. Of course, an addressee is more fine-grained than a patient or an actor. And it depends also on some morphological features of the semantic roles. So, verbs with a patient expressed by a verbal phrase must be able to subcategorize a patient that is an event or a state expressed by a verb. So, like, for instance, verbs of perception or cognition. And it's not by chance that one of the quadruplets of the PVP subset, patient expressed by a verbal phrase, includes four so-called verba putandi: cogito, to think; credo, to believe; opino, to suppose; suspicor, to suspect. They are all collected together. So here we are really at the beginning. So I just wanted to show you what we are starting in this month. There are several open issues. First of all, we have more than 1,000 verbal frame entries that include just an actor and a patient, two arguments, actor and patient. And such a frame is too much coarse-grained to allow for a sufficient overlapping with the Latin WordNet synset. So here we are working on selectional restrictions of this actor and patient in order to see if there is an overlapping. Second, the evaluation metrics are still very simple. They must be weighted. As I said, a sextuple is heavier than one triple. We have to weight this. Then, the lexical subset extracted from WordNet must be extended beyond the synonymy. We should exploit either hyperonymy or hyponymy. Let's see. I don't think that this works really, but let's see what happens. And we have to enlarge the lexical resources for Latin. And we would like to apply the same method on languages that feature similar resources. For instance, Czech with PDT Vallex, also for English. But the point here is that we have two enlarged lexical resources for Latin that are still very small. And this is the work that we do every day at our research center, CIRCSE, in Milan, following on the steps of Father Busa's work. And as I told you, Father Busa left us in the late evening of August 9th, 2011. And we miss him very much. And maybe some of you know that Father Busa was used to wish Merry Christmas and Happy New Year every year to his friends by sending them a funny picture about himself and his work. And in 2011, we wanted to keep this habit of Father Busa. And so we asked the designer to design the last picture of Father Busa's life. And we wanted to imagine him high in sky, finally meeting with his beloved friend Thomas Aquinas, giving him the five, and this was the result. So thank you very much for your invitation.
Living document of that meeting, or two living documents of that meeting, and then one non-animal document of Padre Busa. The two living documents are Professor Pandora and myself, because we attended the 1966 conference.
Great.
Which was not exactly in Prague, but by Prague in the Jodische. And the non-animal document is here. Those who haven't yet seen this punch card, I think it's a gift from Padre Busa to me.
Oh.
And I think it is one of the cards on
which the Index of Mysticus,
which was the card of the lexicon.
It's on my desktop or something similar.
So I can pass it, so please don't steal it. Because it's something which I appreciate very much. Okay, so it was just the something which concerns the ownership but I think we may have some questions, remarks, or comments to the talk. So please feel free to just put your hand.
I want to ask you, how many of you know Latin?
Well, we have to. At least something.
I'm a small friend.
Madonna is going to learn Latin, I'm sure.
So should I give him the floor? I have two or three comments.
Yeah.
Not very substantial ones. One is that the first part of your talk concerning syntax, I think we have met with some of these points when we tried to imitate in the technogrammatical level style English texts. Because with the gerunds and the ing forms or ed forms, the participles, which are that common in English, we had some problems how to achieve that. Unfortunately, I've just been looking around. Unfortunately, our colleague who did that is not here, so she may have some very concrete suggestions or questions which relate to that. Actually, what I liked about the first example of the annotation of the topic for saturation. And one of your examples with the negation was very interesting, and I have to look at it more closely, because you had this negative, newly established note as a note with the contextually bound value, which is very exceptional to have a newly established note in that sense, so an arithmetizer. So that's something which I would like to look in more detail. The other thing is that, well, that's why I would very much welcome your manual. When you said that you will have a manual for annotation on this layer, I think it would be very useful for us, for English and for the context. And the other remark concerned the definition of sunset. I'm very skeptical about the definition that this is this content, a sunset contains lexical items, such lexical items that a replacement of one for the other does not change the truth condition. I think it's not true. I mean, sunset is more, is broader than to agree with this.
This is the reason why I reported exactly the definition.
Yes,
because I don't agree.
I have
so it's their fault.
Yes, yes, yes. And the third one, which I liked very much, was the when you had that kind of evaluation. I think it's very instructive to look at the comparison in this way. I think we can come to some interesting.
I hope so, and I would like to run this experiment or check. And then to give you back the results in order to ask you to evaluate the results.
Yeah,
we are also developing a tool in order to organize the results in physical space, in order to collect the collect the words into clusters that feature some common properties. And well, I can evaluate lasting results, not the check ones. So I will ask you to evaluate this.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
So I've been talking too much, so please. But
I don't have a good question to the data, but I wanted to say there is a Czech translation of a lot of the works of Tomas Akvinas. Done by the Dominicans who actually have a monastery across the river, and now I'm sorry we didn't invite them. because I think that some of them might be interested. And one of the reasons is that there has been a full translation of Summa Theologica in 1920s to 30s, I think.
In Czech.
And that translation is actually a funny way of writing Czech, because it is very verbose, so it copies the structure of Latin sentences to a high degree. So I'm vaguely thinking that there might be a way to do a parallel tree bank more efficiently by starting from your trees and just post-editing them in Czech. I have no idea really how well it would work. And now, I think now they have in progress a new translation into kind of more modern Czech. I haven't looked at it yet. So I just thought that somebody might be interested, actually.
I would be interested, but this is something that is exploding in the field of digital humanities. Everybody talks about translation and alignment. This might be helpful because you could provide people with the text of Thomas Aquinas in a literal translation with at least a fantasy parsing, because it would be nice to evaluate your tools through a domain adaptation. So your tools that are developed on your data, I imagine, on PDT data, which is more or less based on newspaper, is it right? So it would be nice to see how much the domain adaptation runs, works in terms of adapting or not, or just applying the tools on another domain. Thomas Aquinas talks about Italian philosophy, and the Czech language of the translation is quite different from the PDT one, PDT Corpus one. And so I would be very happy, and also to work on the alignment, because this might be helpful also for NLP corpuses, because in some way, if it is so literal, you can transport the annotation that you have in the Index Domesticus tree bank to the Czech text. So I will have to do it. Sure, let's go with these guys.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I haven't thought about it before.
But I can leave you the slides.
But I think that they are, to some, at least into some degree, interesting, because they have very bad, but still they have some online presentation of the Czech translation with the Latin parallel online. So I'll show you later.
Strange that they did not contact us, because the English Submissive was very known and well known in the field. So, however, thanks for the link. There is another ongoing activity that we hope to start, so it's not ongoing actually. And that is to provide the alignment with the Greek Byzantine translation of Thomas Aquinas, which is another big challenge, because the Greek Byzantine is quite different from ancient Greek, and so you never know which kind of Greek tools you should use there. But the alignment is definitely the next step.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, done.
Just one short remark. I noticed in one of your examples that you used on the analytical layer the PNOM function. Where the verb was actually not to be, but it was digital or something like that. We should remember that for the purpose of conversion to UE, because the current rule is that only equivalents of 2B are treated as copulants.
This is important. I can provide you with the list of the verbs that in the passive form, or not only the passive form, the verbs that can govern PNOM in the tree bank beyond the sum, so to be. So like maneo, which means to remain. Latin says ego maneo bonus. I remain good. It's not a good translation, but please keep it because it's literal. And we have these examples. I can provide you with.
I think I can collate the list myself. Yeah. The question is whether we want to convert it to something else, and we have to decide what it should be instead of copula.
It works like a copula, but it has a more fine-grained semantic feature. So it doesn't say only is. So the board is that is predicated by the PNOM.
It's in many languages.
But there is something more. It keeps on being. It remains. It is said. So this is something we have to discuss.
It's like it becomes and so on and so on. So there's, I think multiple languages to various degree have this group of verbs where you could argue that they have something in common with copulas.
Yes.
But it was just a remark.
No,
it doesn't
important.
Actually, it's not bound directly to your talk.
But no, it's important because it's something that we have to discuss even with the other languages, because these are cases that are also in other languages, and if we have to have a strict interpretation of copula or not, and which are the alternatives, so the competitors of the copula annotation. I'm not so well aware of the universal dependencies details to suggest you something, but you are the man here. You can suggest me and explain. So thanks.
Well,
wow.
You don't answer the questions. I would like just thank you again for both the amendments on Trapezunza and on the very, I think, nice talk of the comparison between PDT and the possibility of converting, of using PDT style annotation for Latin.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, very good. Very good. The next meeting will be in Czech. I don't see anybody, or you can check. I don't see anybody else who would mind, so to say. So we will have a prominent guest here, Professor Karlík from Brno, from Masaryk University in Brno, and he will speak on Pokaty. So all of you are invited. So thank you again.
Thank you.